My practice developed steadily throughout the second and third month of the rains retreat. With the beginning of the second month, some of the things that occurred seemed quite good. Good, in quotes, here meaning some parts good and others not so good. I noticed in myself that sometimes I felt good about things and sometimes not. So I asked myself, why are there always these states of good and bad? I posed this question to myself and realized it's because if one likes things being a certain way, one calls them good. And if one doesn't, one calls them bad. Are only the things one likes right and all the others wrong? What I did was question and investigate myself in order to get to know what desire really was. The ways desires express themselves are characterized by these feelings of good and bad. Feelings of good and bad arise from wanting. So I concluded, why bother with these feelings of good and bad? One should take the attitude of not getting involved with these things at all. What one should really take on is the practice of simply having mindfulness in and of itself. So this was the motto I upheld and kept putting into practice. At the beginning of the second month, all my experiences were falling into place. I saw my own mental attitudes and knew the state of mind I was in, both the good states of mind and the bad ones. I saw the states of mind in relation to the mind and saw the mind in relation to the states of mind. In this matter, I saw that the mind, jit, was one thing and the states of mind, arom, were another. Being able to distinguish the way one feels, separating states of mind from that which is the mind, and in this way knowing and seeing one's mind and one's state of mind as separate, one sees, quote, the one who knows. Sees the one who knows the mind and who knows the states of mind. This made me experience everything that was happening in a wakeful manner, feeling aware and alert, both when I was sleeping and awake. I was witnessing my own experience all by myself. It was not as if I were escaping to some other place or being aloof, but instead I was following up on things all the time, both the good experiences and the bad ones. That's the way I saw it. I didn't see this experience as anything particularly good. I simply understood it as something I did that was good enough for keeping myself alert. That was all. This experience reminded me of a passage of Dhamma. It made a strong impression on me when I studied for the NUC-TOM exam. I have frequently mentioned it to you in the past. I learned many other passages, but this one I remember particularly well. It comes easily to mind. Whoever watches their mind will be free from Mara's snare. How does one become free from Mara's snare? By watching the mind. This is exactly what I thought, so I established my mindfulness in the observation of the modes of what I was feeling. At the same time, I continued to give attention to a samadhi object of meditation. It's not that I neglected this. It is necessary to hold on to a samadhi object as well. I didn't seek for anything more distant than the in and out breath. To watch the breath has an impact on the mind. It enables it to overcome defilements and cravings. I observe the samadhi object, and I observe the modes of the mind, both unwholesome and wholesome, knowing the samadhi object and the modes of the mind. These two were joined together and didn't separate whether walking, standing, sitting, or lying down. There was the experience of awareness all the time. Sometimes there were states of depression and discouragement. This was also part of the experience. I thought, not facing any obstacles is impossible in this world. One cannot have everything go smoothly all the time. One has to bear with these obstacles. Whatever happens, one has to endure and pull oneself together. There is no other way. So I tried to be aware of this and patiently endure things. Sometimes I was overcome by the hindrances, Nivarana. They were quite strong. If one were to give a comparison, it was like being a football that is kicked around. When kicked hard, it shoots off quickly. I couldn't pin it down. The mind kept proliferating here and there, thinking about business, the chores, going on alms round. The mind was in such a state, but I actually didn't make much of it. I just saw that this is how it feels, and upheld that these are all just states of the mind that arise, stay a while, and then cease. I saw it as an experience, a symptom that the mind displays. Seeing how this feels in the mind, I thought, this is what the Buddha actually meant when he said, the mind is like that. It has to express good and bad. One can't blame it for this. One can't say that it's all bad. One can't say that it's all good. So I continued observing these things mindfully. If something came up that was really beyond my capacity to endure, I thought, it's anicca, dukkha, and anatta again. If one can't fight it anymore, one just tells oneself, anicca, dukkha, anatta. And let's go of it all, letting it be. So this is what I did. Sometimes it was good in that a feeling of inspiration and having patient endurance would arise from time to time. But I didn't make anything of it. I just considered that this was part of the back and forth of the struggle between coping and not coping. Then, after maintaining this practice for a continuous period, constantly and unremittingly, the various conditions eventually start making sense. The part that I'll kind of just summarize, he then went through a period of more intensified practice, just really taking what he just described to heart and really applying himself, maintaining his awareness and still experiencing feelings of darkness, depression, and other periods that were of happiness, but just keeping in mind this investigation didn't take a preference over any of them, and constantly did that as much as he could through the day and the evening. Lumpo Cha then announced that the monks and novices should have a break from morning and evening chanting. This came at just the right time for me. He reminded everybody that when there was no morning or evening chanting, they should spend their time like practitioners. Now there weren't any communal activities except for water hauling from the well, which we used to do in those days, hauling and carrying water together. I never spoke with anyone when carrying the water. When it was time, we would simply take the poles and tins for carrying, help each other fetch the water from the well, and then carry it to fill up the jars in the restrooms for flushing the toilets, or to fill up the drinking water. Afterwards, I would go have a shower at one of the bathing places, and would then carry on with walking or sitting meditation. At times, while I was doing walking meditation, it started raining, and I was tempted to stop. But then I thought, just let the rain rain. I will keep on walking. Things get wet, but they also become dry again. One shouldn't even be thinking about whether it is going to be sunny or rainy. I don't know where the faith I had came from. I had no worries about what was going to happen with me. I was fully dedicated and pleased with what I was doing. There was continuous interest and motivation. I didn't shy away from possible obstacles. I wouldn't question or analyze where I was at when I was doing walking meditation. Usually when doing walking meditation, I wouldn't wear my upper robe in the formal way, but would wear only the small shoulder cloth, angsa. But from time to time, I robed up completely, somehow afraid that my standards were insufficient, putting my upper robe and laying the outer robe over my shoulder. During this phase of practice, another change occurred. This change, speaking in proper scholarly terms, might be described as the experience of vipassana upakilesa, experiences which defile insight. I had a feeling of bliss and bright radiance within myself, lasting days and nights. The bright light is not like the light of the sun or any source of light, but it is something you feel inside that has these radiant qualities. I didn't get carried away with it, thinking that I was something special. I merely saw what happened as an experience within the practice, happening in and of itself. Things like this can happen. So, for my part, I determined to be mindful and not get lost identifying myself with being this or that. One harbors these feelings of self-importance. One is almost sure to go crazy from such an experience. This is what happens to some practitioners at this stage. They start feeling special and superior to others, seeing everybody else as inferior to themselves, for example. These feelings can occur, so I was determined to have mindfulness and awareness and not let myself get involved with feelings of wanting and giving things personal importance, constantly telling myself, experiences like this, having arisen, must cease again. I had mindfulness with regard to this and focused in this way on what I was experiencing day and night. These experiences can happen. The Buddha even gave them a name, defilements of insight, vipassana upakilesa. They all occur within the scope of vipassana. It seems like when one enters the realm of, quote, vipassana, one has to also enter the realm of vipassana upakilesa. That's the way things happen. But I didn't get lost or deluded. I didn't get carried away with myself. All I saw was a situation of arising, existence, and change. I still kept up all the daily routines. Most of the time when I sat down meditating, I didn't sit all that long. During this phase, I sat for only a bit more than an hour. This seemed to be conducive for my body, and I never had any physical problems, no pains or other frustrating symptoms. Not having health issues, one can practice with ease. I did not develop feelings of self-importance regarding the things that arose in my practice. I kept doing the communal chores, keeping to myself while doing the work, looking at my own mind, my own feelings, just the same as before. I was consciously aware of myself, observing, and trying to watch myself not only when I was awake, but also when sleeping. As I was practicing with unremitting effort, yet another change came. I reached a low and dark spot, feeling that I was under attack again. Sexual desires would flare up every now and again. Other than watching these symptoms suddenly come up, I didn't have any tools to add to my practice. These feelings were displaying themselves, but I didn't develop worries and concerns because of them. I simply stayed alert and was very careful. Whatever happened, one had to be careful, to be on the watch and always suspicious, just as though one were watching wild animals. One sits quietly and composed, as wild animals constantly run back and forth. I was always on the watch, not trusting the situation, in a way that kept me wide awake and well aware. Physically, this was actually quite tiring at times. I felt exhausted and weak. It was like constantly being in a state where there is no room for relaxation. But I kept doing the practice. Then, on one of those days, things changed again. They were perpetually changing anyway. Certain questions came up in my mind. The question arose, this practice, what do we do it for? I was stunned when the answer came, as if the silence itself was answering. This practice? No need to ask. We practice for the sake of practice. This is the way the answer came up. These words appearing, expressing something in a certain form, and there was nothing more to it.